Welcome to episode 318 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
Yay. Hello, crew.
What's up?
Yo.
The level of excitement is three. Yep. This is what happens when we record on a Friday night. Is that what you guys are telling me?
No. It's been a week.
As I was telling you earlier, like, I think I'm destroying my brand by only watching four movies the entire time we haven't been away. I'm usually the one that has like 20 movies to talk about.
So Bill's trepidatiously on the podcast this week.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's just tiptoeing in.
I'm going to be drinking beer the whole show. Let's go.
There we go.
So just for me.
I saw the most nasty thing, like meme style, and it's someone that I'm drinking my Gonster, and there it's half Guinness, half Monster.
Ew.
And it's like you can see it separated.
Nice.
It's so fucking weird and aesthetically unpleasing. I don't know. Why would someone want to willingly drink a Monster? we all have questions about this.
As I was telling Marina earlier, I am willingly drinking some Hoyne Dark Matter right now, and it is rather tasty.
It is very good.
That's the best beer from the island, I'm telling you.
It's pretty good.
I fully agree. Like, for me, it's Guinness and Hoyne. The Dark Matter is legit the best. It's so good. It's so good. But let's talk about some movies, shall we? Our movie of the week. I feel like this was maybe a little underwhelming. The Fall Guy.
But it wasn't supposed to be. It was supposed to be the big Ryan Gosling coming out party. And then it bombed.
It depends on who you ask
as far as enjoyment level, but
yeah, I mean,
I'm going to be really nice to this one.
Well, no, I mean, I still think it is the big Ryan Gosling coming out party. It's just also a really stupid big movie with a lot of action and no story. Like, it's basically plotless. Like, it's an excuse to make a movie with a lot of action and zero plot. Like, it has less plot than Platinum Blonde or whatever that movie was. Atomic Blonde. Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be a love movie to stuntmen.
I think that was in the press like pretty heavy. I saw that one coming.
That's what I appreciated about it.
Mm-hmm. Really. Yeah, I like that part too, actually.
And I really, really have a thing for Ryan Gosling in comedy. I like the way he delivers lines in this. I like this kind of character. I don't know. I was on board, and I thought Leach made another fun, albeit vapid. I totally agree with that. It's completely vapid, but I, as far as a theatrical experience, I had a fun time.
Oh, I fully agree. I think you're totally right. It is just a lot of fun on screen, and no, the thing I appreciate is it doesn't take itself too seriously.
No,
like, it is what it is. It leans into the tropes. It leans into the action. It shows you everything behind the scenes. Like, it's kind of like a making of movie, but that's the movie, which I think is kind of awesome in like this rare inside Hollywood way. And it feels like the most David Leitch movie that David Leitch has ever made. Absolutely. Which I think is kind of cool. And like, honestly, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt would have chemistry with fucking brooms. So there's also that. I mean, they can look at a wall and have chemistry. Like, I don't understand. They exude sex. I don't know. I just don't know.
And there's certain clever things that I had fun with too, like split screen and some like just like movie device stuff that they're using. And a cameo made me laugh because I was telegraphed, and it still made me laugh when it happened, especially because they lean into that guy's like his thing, you know, his like cliched thing that everyone makes fun of them for. So I thought that was really funny. And Aaron Taylor Johnson being in like an amalgam of like four different real life actors out there, and even giving like a Matthew McConaughey line, and I was like, are you gonna show the card that much? I thought that was pretty funny. I just had fun with it, and I like seeing Hannah Waddingham in a big screen movie.
Me too.
Yeah, luckily really she. I just wish more people had seen this film. Like, when I saw the film, I was there with three people on opening day.
That's sad. See, we had a pretty good, like, not like a sellout or anything like that. It was probably like 2/3.
But let me tell you, those two other people really liked Ryan Gosling. They let me know about it, like oohs and ahs.
Well, he's fucking ripped in this movie more than I think he's ever been for any other movie. Even
Crazy Stupid Love?
I think he's even more ripped in this movie, to be honest.
He already looked photoshopped in that movie.
I agree.
We talked about Josh O'Connor's shit-eating grin last episode with Challengers. Uh-huh. Gosling has got that smile. Holy, uh-huh. Like, it's just charisma.
Yeah.
When he's wearing the highlighter outfit, that entire thing is so great.
That sequence.
Give it away. It's so great.
I really
loved it.
There's a number of sequences that are just amazing, and not just the fight sequences. Like that whole club sequence is so pretty funny. Entertaining and just so stupid. And the whole thing with the unicorn,
that made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, it's so over the top, but it really, really works. I don't know. It's not even that I expected more. I kind of knew what I was getting myself into, but I don't know. I thought there would be more story, I guess, all I'm like. And then at the end of the day, I was like, okay, well, that was fun, but it was kind of just like this forgettable movie that I'll probably forget about down the road. Like, I don't know how memorable this is long term, which disappoints me because I would expect the movie with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt to be way more memorable.
Well, I'll be watching it again when Universal sends me my 4K, because for sure.
It's tough too, because it debuted at South by Southwest. A lot of really big praise coming out of South by. And I'm like, okay, this movie's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a good movie. It's just kind of just there. And, you know, I haven't thought about it since.
No.
It's infinitely watchable because of as you said, the cast is incredible. But once you get past that, it's really well shot. I'll give it that. That Justin Bieber highlighter outfit he wore, chef's kiss, you know,
so good.
Really, really good. But holy, that is some bad Subway at like 2 o'clock in the morning and it's gone.
And yeah, it's gone. No, that's totally it. I mean, the thing that I walked away from with was, wow, David Leitch has a production company called 87 North. When did this happen?
Who gets a good old plug?
Yeah, the airbags, right?
I thought
that's a little plug there.
I mean, what I do hope and I think might actually happen if it manages to keep traction is this may be the movie that starts pushing the envelope towards getting some sort of recognition for stunt performers at the Academy, because it's long overdue. And I mean, the grassroots effort needs to start somewhere. Yeah. so might as well start here.
And a big, you know, $100 million movie is a really good stepping point to the mainstream. And I hope comes from this movie the most is that they really start pushing that. And I mean, another movie I'm going to talk about on this episode, mocap actors as well need to get some real recognition there too. So
did you guys have that little video from Leitch and Gosling before where they talked about how they wanted
the cell phones?
Okay,
thing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah,
you can just put it under your jacket.
If you really have to, you know, send that text. And Kiss is getting paid. Like, Jesus, how much did Kiss get paid?
Good start to the film.
I'm not a big Kiss fan, but the fact that they made that part is part of the score, I was into.
It's a great song. Fucking
cool. That was really cool. because I'm not a big Kiss fan at all, which is weird because I love that, like everything that was probably inspired by Kiss. But yeah, I was like that. That was a neat touch for sure.
Yeah, it's good. It's just not great. But I think people will enjoy it if they watch it on, you know, a Saturday night at 10 o'clock on Netflix in 6 months. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's entertaining as all hell. At the end of the day, it's entertaining.
Yeah,
it's like if not quickly digestible, it's entertaining.
It's like a 3.5 out of 5 all day.
Yeah, I think that I have. I don't think I've rated it, but that would probably be my rating, between 3 and 3.5.
I think that's what I was. Maybe I give it a 4. I don't know. I'm a little
Steve's like, I really like this movie. Okay, totally fair. Totally fair. Okay. Well, so who wants to go next? What else have you guys been watching?
All right, let's get into the nitty gritty. Let's go from pretty good to like so amazing. Let's talk about Ordinary Angels.
Wow, talk about a segue.
Yeah, no, this was like mid, but still the fact that they decided to push, because this is a faith-based movie. You can tell as soon as there's a production tag that says, yeah, what, Kingdom Pictures? And I'm like, oof. Usually these movies don't make it into my Blu-ray player, like generally. But there is a little more focus on story over message in this movie. And it makes it, even though it is predictable, paint by numbers, it's still an enjoyable watch just for Alan Ritchson and Hilary Swank, who I'm like hot and cold on. Like I flip-flop with her, but they lean into what's best for them. Some of the crying scenes with Alan Ritchson are a little wacky shack, like not great. But I don't know. It's still pretty mid at the end of the day.
I think the performances were what sold it for me. And honestly, I don't know why they bothered with the crying. I think he emotes just fine without tears. You don't always need to fucking cry.
I also found it like, and this is just an age thing, that it's fucked up that Nancy Travis is now playing Alan Ritchson's mom in a movie. And I'm like, holy fuck. So I Married an Axe Murderer is so long ago now, like so long ago.
Welcome to being old.
I know. It just, every now and then you just have that Matt Damon aging in Saving Private Ryan feeling. And it's just kind of, you have to speak it out loud sometimes. what's next here? I lost my place. I hosted the Q&A for this one in Penticton, a Canadian film called Wild Goat Surf, which was actually filmed and takes place in Penticton, written and directed and produced and starring Caitlin Sponheimer in her debut film. It's a nice like slice of life type of movie about a single mom and her daughter who's a skateboarder that kind of aspires to be a surfer. And they're both kind of trapped. Like basically she wants to be a surfer. She lives in a town with two lakes, you know, and the mom's struggling to string jobs along. And I mean, it's really hard to shoot Penticton and not make it beautiful, because you have a very good backdrop out here. So the film is very sun-kissed at all times, and I really did dig that about it. And I mean, it has a little pitfalls here and there with dialogue-wise, but at the end of the day, I enjoyed it. Thought it was pretty solid, and I had to watch it twice in 1 week, so better like it.
I'm adding this to my list. You said surfing and skateboarding, and I'm like, okay, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, how well was the screening attended?
Actually, it had a pretty solid attendance. More Vol Guy, which wow. I just talked about. Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, I would say we're tapering towards 3/4 full on this one.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And the Q&A went pretty well after. I've never done a Q&A before, like hosted a Q&A, and it was also my first time meeting the two of the Route 504 reps, Angie Power and Alia, I forget her last name, but she's very nice as well. Been dealing with them for a long time now, and I've never met them, so that was pretty cool. And then the beginning, the mic, they didn't have the mic timed for the beginning of it, so I had to like theater voice it and everything. Well, at first, Angie's like, oh, you're going to have to go out there without a mic. And I'm like, Angie, what, use my theater projection voice? I don't have one of those. I'm a podcaster. Like, what do you want? And she looks at me like, uh-oh. And I'm like, I'm just kidding. I got this. We're all nice. Good. We're all good. But yeah, it went well. The did about 15, 20 minutes of Q&A afterwards. So it was pretty solid.
Cool.
Awesome. So, Steve, question about moderating a Q&A.
Yes.
How do you get people to actually ask questions? Because I often find like post movie Q&As such a shit show because people just want to opine and they want to go on for like 10 minutes and there's no question in what they're doing.
Yeah.
Is there something you can do as a moderator that helps to curb that tendency in people, do you think? Or is it a losing game?
I'm not exactly sure. There was a guy there that had more stories than he had questions, but they were pertained to the actual, like, because they filmed, like, he lived nearby and basically rented the production of a few things like golf carts and stuff like that here and there. So he did have stuff that pertained to the production of it, but it wasn't just a question. It was just something that to make the people, because I had Caitlin and then two of the actors and then a producer up there. So it was just more like, oh yeah, we remember that. Cool. You know, I was like, that I was neat that you got that out there, but
yeah, I think it's a losing battle, Melissa. Honestly, you just is. Sometimes you can kind of read the room, but generally speaking, you just don't know.
Hi, I'd like to know how much was your budget? The worst Q&A question of all time.
Well, there are others that are worse.
There was a secure budget question, so.
Yeah, I would take that over the unasked for opinion. I did see something though with, there was a, I think it might have been an Indigenous professor who was talking about her way of dealing with like the non-question questions is to start off the Q&A with like 5 to 10 minutes of people talking to their neighbors first so they can get all that kind of bullshit out. And she asks them to workshop their question if they have a question, to workshop.
That's a great idea.
With their neighbor. To see, like, because we've all sat through Q&As where people say where people ask questions that aren't questions. So this is a good opportunity to kind of get out your first impressions of the film, have a little check-in with your neighbor. Is this a question or is this a comment? And then when we get to the actual Q&A, you can ask, we'll come out to the crowd for questions. And I'm curious to know if that actually works or not. It sounds like kind of a brilliant idea, but yeah. I've never seen it.
I'm totally going to use this. That does work.
Yeah.
This is definitely something I'm going to try.
It sounds like a good psychology
for sure. Exam
or experiment for sure. I have two indie queer films that I actually really enjoyed. One of them is produced by Telefilm, Before I Changed My Mind, which is basically about the new kid comes to school, Robin. It's 1987. Nobody knows their gender and they never reveal their gender the whole film, which I thought was really interesting as well. But Robin immediately tries to befriend the bully of the school. And then, of course, a love interest, like love triangle thing starts, but you never know where Robin's attractions align, really. Like, you get a good hint of it, but you never really lands. And I thought that was really interesting. The director on this one's Trevor Anderson. He wrote it as well. And I thought it was a really interesting feature film. And then the other one is just like a really quiet vacation movie, and it's called Something You Said Last Night. Which is from Luis Del Filippis, who produced this one and directed it. And basically it's about a trans woman writer that goes on vacation with her family, and just the relationship between her and her mom, and then her mom and her sister. I thought it was like an interesting, quieter than mumblecore type of film. It seemed to have left a bigger impression on a lot more people, but I thought it was kind of nice. The remastered Let It Be, I got that one in advance. And I mean, this movie clearly and obviously wasn't appreciated when it was released in 1970. But watching it now and watching it a year and a bit after taking in all of the Beatles' Get Back, I think it's so interesting because this one tells a very different story, and focuses more on just kind of the splintering of the Beatles. But in Get Back, it's definitely way more well-rounded and doesn't really place blame, but just kind of says it was time for all of them to separate. But Let It Be, watching it this time now, it felt like, oh wow, they're really playing Paul as like his ambition drove this whole band apart and everything. And I think that's just fascinating. And then the only other thing I have is I saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes last night.
Mm.
And I was really worried about this film because I am not a huge fan of Wes Ball. I liked Maze Runner, but everything that he made after it, I thought was just very subpar. But he really captured this spirit that Matt Reeves kind of left the reins on. And the mocap actors are really great in this film. But Owen Teague, those eyes on this character of Noah is just such a driving force for this film. And I feel like without Owen Teague's performance, this movie doesn't work. And I really like Kevin Durand as Proximus. And I'm like, yes, more Kevin Durand. Bring more Kevin Durant. Maybe the fact that I was kind of wishy-washy going into the film helped it, but I really dug it. And I'd even feel like this movie was pushing way too long, like, because it is like 2 hours and 26 minutes, I think, like that. But I don't know. I dug it, and it's a really beautiful thing to look at on the big screen, and just how much work went into this film is just all right there.
Yeah, it sets up a reboot, more or less. Mm-hmm. Like it's a whole new series. I liked it too. I just thought it was too long. I thought the first two hours and 15 minutes didn't really have a lot of stakes to it. And then in the final 10 minutes, stakes, like tons of stakes, like so much happens. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Set up the next movie. But yeah, you are right. The mocap is incredible.
I'm blown away every second of just,
yeah. The film looks great. I'm glad there's supermodels, and when the world falls, because that woman is way too done up for that movie.
She just walked off the set of The Witcher. You got to give her a break.
Okay, sure. But no, it's good. I like you thought that the Matt Reeves thing would be a problem, but I don't think it was.
No,
the good script. No. It moves pretty good. I just wish it had more stakes to it. That's all.
I really there's a really interesting threat, just like parables with like the Bible and everything and myth and how you interpret it and everything that was the part of the film that I really liked and really picked up on. And I never, because I again with Matt Reeves not being involved, I thought that this would be a lot glossier than what we got. So I was prepared for something entirely different.
I actually really liked the first 10 minutes.
Yes. Oh yeah, it's really, really, really solid.
Really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely recommend. See it on the big screen if you can. Big screen, big sound.
And the score also takes little things from the original. Like, I recognize a couple. I'm a kind of a nerd in this way. I recognize a couple of sound cues from Conquest. And I was like, ooh, that's interesting. That's all I got. Sorry. Man. That was what I saw last night. So, I rewatched Blazing Saddles because I got the Blu-ray and I love that movie. I haven't seen it in 25 years, probably.
How does that movie age?
There's a lot. It's like, holy shit.
It's a lot.
Especially Mel Brooks as an indigenous person with a headdress and everything. I was like, yikes, but I don't know. Still, I didn't get a hump from that man. I'm watching you, son of a bitch. I don't know. There's certain stuff that still will always make me laugh. And Cleavon Little is so great in the film. And so is Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder is he's just a lovable champ.
Mel Brooks is kind of an underrated filmmaker.
especially the insanity of the third act, where they're just going to other sets and like going into the cafeteria and stuff. Like it's wild. And it's funny that they basically did a kid's remake of that movie with that Paws of Fury animated film that came with The Legend of Hank. It's Blazing Saddles.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah, and it's really funny too. It's because it looks so shittily animated and really didn't get any kind of push from Paramount. Nobody knows about the movie, but I brought my daughter to it and we laughed our butts off at the film. So
nice.
And it's Michael Cera's the lead.
So. Chloe was obsessed with Rock Dog, which nobody has seen.
They make two sequels as well. Direct-to-video Lionsgate sequels. Yeah.
Oh, dude.
They've made Luke Wilson's in the first movie, and then he's not in either of the other ones.
Even the first movie isn't that great. I can't believe they got two sequels out of it. But she loved it. Loved it for like a year solid. That's all she watched.
They're making them for her.
Not anymore. Now, if it's not Alien, she is seven. She is seven. Okay.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yay! She came down the other day and asked me, do you have Alien? I'm like, you're not allowed to watch this by yourself. I'm watching it with mommy. I'm like,
Well, it looks like you got a movie date for Romulus then.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure she got through Aliens.
Auntie Marina, do you have Prometheus on Blu-ray?
No. That movie actually doesn't exist.
I actually don't.
It was actually a quadrology. Myth.
Listen, when you get to three, call me.
Yeah, that movie's like Kazam. It doesn't actually exist.
So Chloe, there's this director named David Fincher, and he got screwed.
That's why I said, I'm like, when you get to three, call me. Oh, God. Okay, sorry, I sidetracked this. What else? Who wants to go next? Movies.
My list is very short. I don't know. But if you
hit us with it, Melissa.
No, you go.
Okay. Well, so highlight of my cinephile existence, I finally saw the complete Star Wars original trilogy on the big screen back to back at the Rio Theater in Vancouver. And it was everything I hoped it would be. I know that those movies are not for everybody, but they were such huge formative influences in my childhood. Like, I don't remember not knowing about Star Wars. I grew up watching them on television all the time in the 80s. My parents were both of my parents were super into sci-fi and they loved Star Wars. I wanted to be Princess Leia so badly. I love those movies, like with flaws and all, it doesn't matter. They're just, for me, they're like perfect films and I'd never, ever seen them. That's not true. I did actually, as a 6-year-old, my parents took me to see Return of the Jedi in the movie theater. And it's the reason that I will not go to the movie. Like, I will not go to the bathroom in a movie. Because like, no matter how uncomfortable I am, I'll just wait until the end. Because I had to go to the bathroom so bad and I missed the scene where Luke tells Leia that they're brother and sister. And I was just shattered. I was shattered that I missed that reveal to her. Like, we already know because Luke finds out earlier in the film, but I missed the scene where Luke actually got to tell Leia. And I was, my 6-year-old self was devastated and it turned me off of ever going to the bathroom during a movie for the rest of my life. And so seeing these movies on the big screen with like a huge crowd of fellow Star Wars nerds was so fantastic. Like people were like loudly cheering when the Death Star blew up. There was a lot of clapping at the I love you, I know scene. It was all the stuff. It was just so great watching them in that theater with that group of people and finally getting to see them the way that Lucas intended on the big giant screen.
So they were the original untampered.
Oh God, no. Lucasfilm and Disney will only allow theatrical releases to be the 97 recut versions with
unless you're Tom Charity.
Well, I was gonna say Spark
legally.
Yeah, legally. No, in 2015 or 2016, I can't remember what year it was. Spark actually hosted a screening of the original three Star Wars movies, original prints from the vault, from the Lucas vault. Damn. Yeah, it was a big, that was the first time.
Don't get sued. Don't get sued.
No, no, we had, it was brought by somebody from the Lucas Vault. One of the VFX supervisors brought it with them.
That might have, was that before Disney owned them?
Yeah, it was before Disney owned them.
Yeah. So, because that's the thing. Now that Disney owns them, that's, it's not allowed anymore.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So there were a lot, there was a lot of yelling about Han shot first and all that, you know, malarkey. But
did everybody sing the Nub Nub song at the end of Return of the Jedi? Come on, let's go.
There, yes, there was a lot of chanting at C-3PO. It was good. It was a fun time. It was That's a really awesome fun time. Yeah. So that was a huge highlight for me. And then I also this week is Doxa Festival here in Vancouver, which is the documentary film festival. I haven't been able to see much because work's been a bit crazy, but I did manage to snag a ticket for Tasha Hubbard's new film. And I love Tasha Hubbard. I think she is just such an incredible documentarian. I think she weaves together so many different layers of story and meaning in her films. And this latest film called Singing Back the Buffalo is, this has been like a very long passion project for her. She started getting involved with Indigenous action to preserve and repopulate the buffalo probably like 20 years ago, and is even involved with the establishment of a charity that helps to fund First Nations to bring buffalo to their reserves. And it's like, it's a cross-border initiative that involves many nations, both in the US and Canada. There was a lot more sort of buffalo ranching in the States than there has been in Canada. And there's like, there was sort of, it's really interesting. There was like one Indigenous man who essentially took a bunch of buffalo calves off to a ranch, and like they were all orphan calves because they went from like millions and millions across the grasslands to less than 100 buffalo left. And the way that Indigenous people have been able to steward and kind of bring these populations back and reintroduce them to territories where they had not been in a long time is really moving. And it's not just about like the buffalo restoration, but it's about like Indigenous kinship relationships with the natural world and with buffalo, and those historic ties and those kinship ties to that keystone species. And then just like, there's like stories in the film that just kind of, you get like goosebumps listening to them. Like about some five buffalo approaching a group of singers that were drumming and sort of dancing alongside them. Like there's all these signals, and even like Tasha herself goes out on a hike with a few other Indigenous women to see a buffalo herd. And she's told afterwards by the park rangers that the buffalo actually came to them, that like many times people have gone out on hikes to try and find the buffalo herd and they never see them. Like they'll go out hiking in this area for 2 weeks and never actually run across them. But Tasha and her friends were singing buffalo songs, and the park rangers through drones and stuff could tell them that the buffalo actually came to them every time they sang a song, which is just like, that kind of stuff is amazing and so moving to hear. So that was a really great experience. And she was here and did a bit of a Q&A. Hence also my questions about the Q&As. Because
you were frustrated with some people, I assume.
Yeah. I mean, not all of them. There were a couple of people that
some
had
though. We can call some out though for suffering from main character syndrome.
Yeah. It's really interesting. She was talking about how like in the States the buffalo restoration is light years ahead of where we are in Canada, but the whole issue around Indigenous sovereignty and the recognition of UNDRIP is so much further ahead in Canada than in the US. And so they're actually doing a major theatrical release of this documentary, which I think is fascinating, in the fall. And they are planning to do a big rollout into the States too. So I think that's really awesome. And I really hope that when this launches in the fall, that lots of people go and get a chance to see it, because I don't think that doesn't happen for a lot of Indigenous documentaries. So, yeah. So really, that's really great news for her.
Like, really, documentaries in general don't get like, wide theatrical releases. So,
yeah.
I was really hoping Doxa would get a documentary I really want to see called Secret Mall Apartment. Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah.
Where these guys build an apartment in a mall in the U.S. and don't get caught for 4 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
The trailer is crazy.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it. Hopefully Viff gets it. But I was hoping Hot Docs had it. So I thought, Doxa will get it. But they didn't get it. So, yeah. One to look out for.
Bill, what do you got?
I got some rom-coms.
I know the one.
No hate for Anne Hathaway, man. I'll have to jump through the screen.
I got two. The Idea of You with the new Michael Showalter film with Anne Hathaway. She is so good.
She is so good. And the movie is not deserving of how good Anne Hathaway is.
She's so much better than the film. She takes her daughter to Coachella and sort of walks into the dressing room of this boy band lead singer guy, and sparks happen. I'm like, yeah, no shit. It's Anne Hathaway. She's really pretty.
Have you seen Love and Other Drugs?
And yeah, it's like. Anne Hathaway trying to get her groove back for an hour and a half, and I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's really not good, but she is incredible.
Okay, not terrible. Okay, I'm the woman that saw it. It's not terrible. Okay, it is though. Like, Bill is right. Anne Hathaway is far better than the movie is. She's also far better than the story. But the book is really well liked. It's a book that's been kicking around for like well over, I think, almost a decade. And I think they've been trying to get it made for quite some time. So the fact they finally got it done is great. I think it ends differently than the book does, which had a lot of people up in arms. I honestly thought it was great. I'm like, she is out there looking amazing, dating a younger guy and rocking it. Good for her. I really like this movie. I think I might have rated it a 4. Like, I was on the end halfway through. Like, she did it for me. I'm like, I am girl crushing big time. Give me. And all the media around Anne Hathaway over the last couple of weeks as she promoted this film, full respect for her. Like, full respect. I mean, she's 40 and owning it. I mean, good for her. I'm here for it. Give me all the Anne Hathaway.
I was crushing on her and I still gave it a 3.
Sorry. A 3 is actually high from you for a rom-com.
Yeah. And the other thing I watched, Steve already shit on this film, The Greatest Hits.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking to myself, it's got a science fiction aspect to it. I love science fiction. So, and I love music. So there's gotta be something. Oh, Steve was right. Shit.
Her all lines are so annoying. All of her lines are so annoying and so like I am giving you a quote you can write on a wall. And it's like,
I think the main problem with the film is that there actually was a really good idea here.
I don't think there is. I thought the concept was kind of shitty, to be honest. Like, I didn't think it worked. It's problematic from the get-go. It's like you had this one idea, but you didn't actually work it through before you wrote a whole movie about it. There were so many gaping holes with this concept, which I think for me is kind of what breaks the movie. Because I thought the performances were fine. The thing is, it's badly put together because it's a bad idea.
No, but it's like Quantum Leap with music.
Quantum Leap was also a bad idea.
Like, oh, you're wrong. You're wrong.
No.
Don't you dare say anything about Sam Beckett.
Yeah. But no, what's her name? Lucy Boynton. Boynton. Yeah, she's like kind of dead wood in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Justin H. Min is the only buddy that works in this.
I thought he was actually really good. And
Shortcomings reminds you how great Shortcomings is, in my opinion.
And new Superman's got a little bit of charisma. I'll give him that.
He's the new Superman. Yeah. I totally
like
that. Yeah. I don't think he's going to have that big beard in Superman. But I thought he was good. I didn't like Boynton. And I just thought, wow, this should have done something. And it just does not do anything.
It fizzled really quickly.
Yeah, but so yeah, sorry, Steve. I should have listened to you. My bad.
You know,
but
people are gluttons for punishment.
The power of sci-fi compels me. What can I say? That's it for me. As I said, not a lot.
Oh, wow.
We're finite this week.
Actually, one more thing. For TV, X-Men 97 is really rad.
It is really good. Dan and I just finished that.
So good.
It is really good.
If you'd ever watched the Fox animated show from the 90s, it takes up after that. It's really good.
I don't remember the show from the 90s, but I still really liked X-Men 97. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. So it's like on par with like the best movies and Logan, I would say.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Yeah.
I'd also, because I forgot TV, I'm going to drop in Dead Boy Detectives as well. I'm enjoying that.
Neil Gaiman.
Exactly. Yeah. Neil Gaiman, Matt Wagner. Yeah. I love Matt Wagner, so.
I don't think I know who Matt Wagner is without looking him up.
Did The Sandman, Wesley Dodds.
Oh. Nice.
Like the Sandman and Lucifer and like the Neil Gaiman, like the one that was just made for Netflix. But Matt Wagner's Sandman was like a noir detective type series. It was really, really, really great. And he also did Grendel.
I liked Grendel.
Grendel's fucking awesome. So that's Matt Wagner.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I caught up with a couple of things. I saw Dogman, which is Luc Besson's new movie, old movie, new movie. I have no idea.
It's been kicking around for a while. I saw that movie over a year ago.
So finally caught up with it. It stars Caleb Landry Jones in a really good performance. I actually really like this movie.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
Jones is great. He's great in everything.
He is, but he tends to be kind of super creepy. Like he always creeps me out. This is the first time I saw him in a movie where I wasn't creeped out. Like
Florida Project.
Oh, true. Yeah, he's not creepy in that either. Yeah. I forgot he was in that. I really like this movie. He plays this individual who I guess he's a transvestite who trains dogs. To do his bidding, and his whole story is told in flashback. I thought it was really solid. I really, really enjoyed this.
Did you read the story about how Luc Besson trained those dogs himself?
No, I didn't read anything about the movie.
Okay, yeah.
Literally, I watched it and was really impressed and moved on.
Yeah, supposedly Luc Besson is now a dog trainer.
That's crazy.
Very strange.
Also, I will say that Caleb Landry Jones in character films excels all the time, because there was a little Australian one he did called Nitram that is like nobody talked about that was phenomenal. It's based on a true story of like this brutal massacre in a small town in Tanzania, and it's all the actions leading up to the mass shooting, and he's the killer.
Oh,
it's so well done.
Well, like Melissa says, he's always good. Mm-hmm. Like he is always a solid performer, but I haven't seen him in a while. And I was really impressed by his performance here. I thought he was really, really good. Benjamin Brewer's Arcadian with Nick Cage. Yeah. And Jaden Martell from It and Maxwell Jenkins, who was in Lost in Space. This movie has potential. It's just kind of meddling. It just doesn't really do anything. It's really pretty. It's a really interesting concept. It opens really well. It's like the end of the world. The apocalypse has come. I don't know, maybe aliens. It's hard to tell. You follow Nick Cage into the wilderness of remote wilderness, I guess. And he finds two kids. I don't know if they're his kids or he just finds two kids in a shed. And then fast forward like 16 years and, you know, they're teenagers and the world is still shit. And there's these creatures that come at night. The creatures are weird. The design is strange. I read about the inspiration for the creature design, which I thought was stupid. Like, Goofy? Really? You want to make Goofy a horror movie? Like, this makes zero sense. They're shaky cam because they're shaky cam for like no reason. I don't know. I was very underwhelmed. I really expected a lot more from this. And Nick Cage is there for 5 minutes and then he disappears for half the movie and then pops in for the last 5 minutes. I think he did Brewer like just a solid. He's like, okay, I'll be in your movie to get you some money, but I can't be here for the whole time.
I thought he was over his will work for food days because he's been doing some bigger movies now, right?
I was looking, and he did another movie with Brewer a couple of years ago called The Trust, which I haven't seen. But with Elijah Wood? I think so.
Yeah,
I
haven't seen it, but I'll watch that. That's a good combo.
But I'm pretty sure that Nick Cage is in this as a favor. Like, honestly, I was just really underwhelmed. The trailer looked really promising and the opening sequence is really great. And then it just does not manage to get back there for like 90 minutes. Thankfully, it's short. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's just not very good. Blood for Dust, Rod Blockerhurst new movie with Scoot McNairy, who's Scoot. Always great. Always, Scoot. Always great.
Hold the Catch Fire represents.
Always. Kit Harington is in this, and so is Josh Lucas, and I think there's somebody else in this that I don't remember. But Scoot McNairy plays, it takes place in like I think it's the 80s. I think there are actually title cards with the years, and I just don't remember. Pretty sure it's the 80s. He plays a traveling salesman who gets himself into some trouble, needs money, and hooks up with Kit Harington, who he used to work with, to basically run some illegal things to make a quick buck, and things go horribly wrong. It's this movie where literally half the movie is them in cars and shitty motels. They're driving along, you know, it's dark outside, there's snow sometimes, and it's just like badly lit, but it's actually still really interesting. It's just this very low-key movie, which I was surprised by. I actually did enjoy it. And the final act blows up into this like crazy action sequence that actually really works. And because the rest of the movie has been so quiet, it kind of comes as a shock, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I wasn't expecting much. So this one surprised me.
Well, it's got Scoot. I'll watch anything with Scoot, except I won't watch Batman versus Superman again.
That's okay. You're allowed.
It's like the worst plot point of that whole movie.
Guys, I went to see Challengers and I'm disappointed. Yes. Because you undersold this movie in a
okay, good.
This movie is so good.
I said it was one of my favorite movies of the year, and I'm having a hard still time trying to decide what's the better one.
It is still underselling it because this movie is on another level. And forever now, when people say big dick energy, I'm like, fuck big dick energy. Tashi energy. Big Tashi energy all the way. This is what I'm pumping from now on. She is the big dick in this movie, and I will take it any day of the week. She is so good. So good. And that final sequence, gold.
It's so good.
That final yell when she like leans in, and I'm like, this is the moment right here.
Yeah.
So good, Melissa. So good.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mel.
Underwhelming.
No, dude, that is the moment.
I disagree too. It's the best ending.
I love that it like there's ambiguity. I love that. I just love it. I love that you're like, okay, what's gonna happen next with these people? I love that.
Yeah. No, I love it.
Yeah.
No, that final scene.
So what was your opinion of the ball cam, Marina?
I'm honestly trying to figure out how they did that.
It's so insane.
I don't know. Like, I want to see the behind the scenes on how they did that. Because I assume it's VFX, because I don't see how you could attach a camera to something like that and not break the camera with every time it hits something. It's super impressive. It's technically like really the tennis in the movie is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very good. My only sort of nitpick is I'm not sure I loved all the jumping in time. Like, I didn't think it was super necessary. I think you could have maybe streamlined some of those jumps a little bit more. I can see why it's important. And maybe on a second watch, I'll warm up to it a little bit more. But after a while, I stopped even looking at the dates. And it was just like, what length is her hair? That's what's going to tell me where we are in time. Because are we like young Tashi? Are we middle Tashi? Or are we now Tashi? Like, it's the hair. How short is that? But other than that, that was kind of my only nitpick. I thought it was really good. And like the perfect example of how you can do sexy without having to show anything. Like you don't need to see nudity to make things sexy.
No.
Like it's like a masterclass. And the soundtrack is still amazing.
I feel like if you don't get some of Zendaya's charisma out of this movie, then I don't know what to show you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
You're beyond help.
Yeah, yeah. You're not receiving something.
Yeah, no. And that look, like, she just has these looks. The camera, like, Luca just places the camera perfectly. Like, there's the look when she leans back on the bed, like that first time that they're together, where you could just see it in her eyes. She's like, yes, this is, I'm in control. I will always be in control. And then that final look before she does the whole, yes, like, just, you can see it in her eyes, that buildup. She is so good.
Yeah, she's so a star, good. For sure. Yeah,
for sure, for yeah. sure. So yeah, Challengers, very, very good. Yes. Good
they were, I mean, all three of them were amazing. Like, oh, yeah. Zendaya's great. Josh O'Connor, I just love him in absolutely everything.
I think he's great.
And yeah, he also has just tremendous amount of charisma. But I thought Mike Faced was also, like, an absolute revelation in this movie. Yeah. Like, I'd only ever seen him in some crappy teen show that was on Amazon. That was the only time I'd ever seen him before this.
And he's so good at West Side Story.
West Side Story,
I guess I blocked that out of my head. After
me too, because I went looking. I'm like, you know, he looks vaguely familiar, but I can't pinpoint from where. And then I saw he was in West Side Story. I think it's the only thing I've seen him in. But
he was in a show with, like, Jack Nicholson's kid on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson's son, who is remarkably charismatic on screen as well. Actually.
Wow.
But it was a shitty teen drama about some, like, suicidal.
Oh, Samarina will like it.
it was like a teen game where they could die, and
anyway. Something I'll probably like.
It's good trash TV. I enjoyed it, but
okay. I watched Big Mood, which is this dramedy from Channel 4 with Nicola Coughland. Most people will know her from Dairy Girls or Bridgerton, I think is the one that they will mostly know her from. And Lydia West. So she plays, and Nicola plays a struggling playwright who is dealing with mental health issues. So she's bipolar and she stops taking her medication and things slowly start to unravel. And then she goes back on her medication and things get worse. So, like, she is dealing with this, like, basically mental breakdown. And then her best friend Maggie is dealing with her own drama. She is the co-owner of a bar that was left to her by her dad, which she never really wanted, but now she's got it. She needs money. Her brother wants to sell the bar, and she's basically forced to sell it to him, basically, so he can sell it to a developer to make money. That's the essentially, like, what happens in 6 episodes or 7 episodes. I don't even know. The episodes are only like 22 minutes long, but man, the show packs a punch. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's really dark in places. And I'm not really sure where it's going. I hope they come back for season 2, because I'd like to see how this ends up, because it is certainly left with a lot of questions at the end of season 1. I was impressed. I thought it was really good.
Isn't it her season on Bridgerton this year?
Yeah,
yes, mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, it's coming out, I think, next week or in two weeks. Netflix keeps telling me it's coming. Because, you know, I'm 16th. Waiting.
I've had it for 4 weeks now, 4 or 5 weeks now. I don't watch Bridgerton, though, so it doesn't really help me out.
Listen, season 2 was horrible.
Season 2 was horrible.
The B thing was still the worst thing ever, but season 1 is pretty good.
Hopefully my girl's next season. That's all I'm going to say.
Who's your girl?
What was there? There's a spinoff too, right?
Oh, I'm at this point, they're just going to keep making, you know, Shondaland is going to keep making Bridgerton sequels until they run out of books, until they write their own books, I guess. I don't know.
The spinoff was the king and queen story.
Oh, which was pretty good. Okay. I liked it.
I don't remember her name, but it's the one, it's the best friend of the Nicola Coughlan character.
Eloise.
Yeah, Eloise. Yeah.
The smart one. She's the bookish one.
Awesome. Yeah.
And finally, Thank You, Good Night, which is the Bon Jovi documentary on, I think it's on Disney.
Yeah, I watched episode 1 last night, actually.
Yeah, it's nothing to write home about. Like, it doesn't, no major reveals here. I mean, they basically had carte blanche to Bon Jovi. He's clearly directed the way for this documentary. That said, it was still really interesting. I didn't realize that he basically lost his voice. which is a little bit shocking. But it's just a kind of like an interesting look at, you know, an 80s rocker that's still around. I don't know.
Is Richie Sambora there?
He doesn't appear to the end of the first episode. And then he's basically, I really like what he says at the end. He's like, so what, do we lie or are we telling the truth? Yeah. The whole truth here. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, he comes in the final, like, two episodes. He really gets some airtime and you get a little bit of insight into what happened there.
Because he's not in the band anymore, is he?
No, he hasn't been in the band in for a while. 20 years. Yeah.
Since 2006, yeah. They said, when they brought that other guitar player in. But one thing could be, and we're talking about charisma with just a month ago, Bon Jovi is still charismatic as hell.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure.
It's crazy. And I love when they're showing the old footage of him. I'm like, look at that stallion.
He was a pretty good looking guy. It's hard to
know. Holy crap. He's still good looking. He's still good looking, I would argue. He's I would argue they show him. Well, I would even argue they show him a bunch and that Bruce Springsteen is still a good looking man.
Oh, yeah. 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 Bruce makes an appearance.
They call him the boss for a reason. And I love his involvement in this documentary as well. Because I'm not a band all Bruce fan either. I know my songs, but I'm not like, I don't worship Bruce, but damn, that good dude's got presence. And and what he means to music should always be revered. And it definitely is in this series.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a pretty solid documentary. I enjoyed it. I'm always up for, give me the behind the story of the good old days, I guess. I don't know.
Is it on par with that Milli Vanilli doc from earlier?
No, the Milli Vanilli doc is, I think, way better.
It's better.
Yeah, that was really good. Surprisingly good.
Yeah, no, this is just very like by the numbers. This is what happened over the course of his career. It kind of jumps back and forth in time, like today and into the past. Like Steve says, for me, more interesting was some of that like original footage and the fact that he's actually like now documenting all of this material that he's like collected of the band over the course of his entire career. So he's got like VHS tapes and cassettes of like demos. Like that stuff is really interesting. And the whole archival concept of, you know, archiving all of the work that you've amassed over the course of your career, even stuff that's never seen the light of day. I think that's really interesting. It provides some nice insight into like the creative force that goes into it. But I mean, I think it's easy to forget that he's a really good songwriter. Like him and Richie Sambora are really great songwriters. I mean, those songs are still popular for a reason because they're really fucking good songs.
Well, even that one that he was shopping at the beginning was great. The demo Runaway. Runaway is a great freaking song.
It is a really good singable. Song.
It's so like it's an anthem, right? And they're totally right. But yeah, even like digging out those old tapes, like the Atlantic Highway, what the band was called, the first band.
It's
really interesting. The thing, because I'm still going through the series, but I'm looking forward to getting to the point in his career, the Keep the Faith, when he cut his hair and everyone was like, oh my God.
Yeah, there's a comment on that, actually.
It's so I'm excited for that, because I remember exactly, and it might just like in memory of that happening. So I'm excited to get to that point.
I remember I discovered Bon Jovi in the 90s. 1990, I think it was 1994, because Always was the hit single at the time. I was like, who is this band?
The only good thing about Always is that Carla Gugino is in the video.
Oh yeah. it's a pretty good song. Who's Bon Jovi?
You weren't like Blaze of Glory?
Yes.
Or?
I was just gonna say Young Guns was my conduit. Was my conduit. And I was like, because it was like the theme for the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I was all about that. Yeah. I rented that movie so many times, both movies so many times. I would rent those two and Major League 1 and 2 so many times. Anytime I came to my mom's house to visit, I'm like, we're going to the video store. I'm getting those ones for sure. And then something new.
That's hilarious. and that's what I've been watching. So what's coming, Bill?
I know what we should pick, but I'll save it.
There's one that's very apparent here. So yeah, last episode I talked a little too much and said a week in advance. So we'll just talk again. Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic.
No, the fact that they're celebrating the dad even in the trailer, no, I'm shooting that one right now.
If Imaginary Friend,
I have my ticket. Cute. And it's Krasinski. I don't know, unless you count brief interviews with hideous men, hasn't really disappointed in my opinion. So
true. And Strangers Chapter One, which press screened in Vancouver last week, and everybody said it was shit.
Oh no,
which broke my heart.
God damn it, Rennie. You ruined it.
Listen, not all of the Riverdale actors can go on to amazing things and Oscar nominations. You know, like,
can any of them?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Charles Melton. But Charles Melton, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one.
The one.
So May 24th is actually quite stacked. Furiosa.
That's my pick.
Probably should be the movie.
That's my pick.
Which is also press screened and everybody is gaga about it. So I can't wait. Some people even said it's better than Fury Road, which I don't know how that's humanly possible.
I don't think that's possible in any way, shape, or form.
Those big words.
Yeah.
Luckily in Canada, we have an actual distributor that's not Netflix for Hitman, the new Richard Linklater film.
Is it VBS?
VBS has it. So we're going to get actually theatrical.
Wait, is that also on the 24th?
Yeah, 24th.
I doubt this
guy's going to get it, I think though. Maybe Hitman.
So yeah, everybody, this has been kicking around festivals for a while and lots of big praise. So this is going to be a good one. Also the Garfield movie.
It's inspiring people to fight each other at press screenings. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Two guys or three guys were fighting right in front of the screen. It was on TMZ the other day. One of them
was it over? Professional boxer. Was it Bill Murray? Was it like a fight over Bill Murray versus
Bill Murray's the better Pratt? One. No, Chris Pratt is clearly the voice of Garfield right now. So he's better.
Maybe one of them was an Odie guy and the one was a Garfield guy. Who knows?
The guy's like, no. Then the third guy steps in. He's like, no, Lorenzo Music is the best Garfield.
I love John. So that's it for that week. And then May 31st, there's a horror film. I don't even know what it's about. It's called In a Violent Nature.
And it follows the killer.
Yeah, but it's it got an NC-17. And they're putting it out unrated. So automatically I want to see it just for that because it's going to be brutal. So I can't wait.
And I'm getting a screener.
Nice. So Steve will be able to see it. And finally, friends, if you haven't seen it, Robot Dreams. Finally.
May 31st.
There we go.
Yeah.
And we thought, and you guys thought this would never happen.
Yeah.
Oh no, we knew it was gonna happen. It was just a question as to when is Neon putting this shit out.
It's gonna be October.
They botched that.
Yeah, they could have capitalized on the Oscar nom for
The fact that they didn't, and it's 3 months after the Oscars.
Plus
yeah,
they had like a one night screening thing a couple months ago that kind of might have ruined the audience. I don't know. Just put it out last December.
I don't know.
But that's it. So probably Furiosa, I'm guessing.
Well, the Marina was saying that Hitman.
Well, yeah. I'll go to both. So
okay, yeah. But I don't know if I'm getting Hitman though. So unless Claire hooks me up, so I doubt it's playing here.
Hitman, I think comes out
on Netflix
three or 4 weeks later on Netflix. So if you will be able to, you will get a chance to see it. It's just. We're going to see it theatrically.
Okay, cool. So I think we should just do Furiosa because that's the one that opens everywhere. And then we can always circle back on Hitman when it lands on Netflix and everybody has a chance to see it.
Cool.
Okay, I'm very excited for Hemsworth in Furiosa, actually, because she looks like almost unrecognizable.
I know. The first trailer, I was like, what the hell is that? Like, it honestly took me by surprise. And then when I went, I'm like, no way. The nose, man. The nose and the hair, yeah. Like the whole thing is just
his mannerisms too. Like it's great.
He's great. He's
like really hamming it up. Yeah.
I love it.
I was looking at the poster, and he has like a teddy bear like on a necklace.
Welcome to the world of George Miller.
I apparently he's amazing in it, and I saw one tweet that kind of bugged me, and it was like, oh, why didn't Chris Hemsworth play a villain before? And I'm like, because you didn't see Bad Times at Casino Royale, or what is it called again?
Bad Times at the Royale, I think, isn't it? It's just the Royale?
Yeah, that's what it is.
The El Royale.
At the El Royale. Yeah, there you go.
And I was like, you clearly didn't see that, and fuck you for not seeing that movie. That movie's great.
Okay, so that's the deal. The deal is George Miller.
Yes. I'm so excited. Both trailers just get me jazzed. Especially when you see him on the big screen, when they roll out on the big screen, you're like, ooh.
I'm looking.
I really hope it means because the costume designer for Fury Road was so amazing and she won the Oscar. And I would love to see her go up to Collection Awards. She's responsible for the teddy bear necklace, Bill.
Yeah. Supposedly Anya Taylor Joy wanted to shave her head and George Miller wouldn't let her do it.
Really?
So that big bald cap. Yeah.
Oh, wait, it's a bald cap.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he would not let her shave her head.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I wonder what he knows that she doesn't.
Yeah. But
he was worried that he'd need reshoots and then
maybe.
Yeah.
Plus there's also the Cannes Film Festival starts next week. Mm. So we'll get some indication of what the fall festival lineups will be like.
Right. Nice.
I don't know, man. That first teaser video, they're calling it a trailer. I'm sorry. That is not a trailer for Megalopolis. I'm curious. I do not know what to make of this. It's either going to be a disaster or the greatest thing ever. I'm not sure which one.
I don't know. I saw Tetro. That movie sucked.
This is it. Like he is not on a good track record. And I appreciate that he sold part of his winery to raise the money. Like good for him. But I'm concerned. Was it worth it? I'm not sure.
We'll see. We'll see. A lot of your regular moviegoers have forgotten the name of Francis Ford Coppola at this point.
They don't. Yeah.
They have no tether to him unless you're like the Godfather, Apocalypse Now.
Well, and even then, you might get a lot of blank stares unless you're like 40.
That's sad. That shit makes me sad. I actually got a Coppola movie the other day from on Blu-ray that I've never seen. I don't even think I've ever heard of it. The Rain People with James Caan. I'm like, it's like 1969. So this is like beginning Coppola.
Pre-Sunny.
Yeah. Right? So and check it out and we'll see.
Just for the record, I love The Godfather Part Two the most, but the Conversation is quite possibly his second best film.
And if he hadn't made The Conversation, then Paramount wouldn't have had a foot in the door.
No.
Yeah.
The Conversation is classic.
That's finally getting a 4K, by the way. Can't wait for that.
Nice. Who's putting it out? Because it's not Paramount.
No, it's Second Sight in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Listen, Risky Business is coming out on Criterion. Do you think I pre-ordered that shit? Yes, I have.
It's about goddamn time. I always thought that movie should be Criterion. Especially, I cannot wait. Especially like movies from directors that just disappeared after.
Yeah. Okay, so I haven't seen the cover. Is it him in his underwear?
Yep.
All right, sweet. Yep. There you go.
Yeah.
Iconic shot.
Just give me the commentaries. I want all the fucking commentaries. There's like four commentaries on that disc, and you better believe I'm going to be listening to all of them.
Tom Cruise knows no bounds.
Yeah, no, it does not. I am looking at my picture of The Firm signed by Tom Cruise.
His commentary with Cameron Crowe on Jerry Maguire is actually really good. So,
oh, okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't love that movie. Like, this is the thing. Like, it's not a movie I love.
Okay. Well, it's not Cameron Crowe, even near Cameron Crowe's best movies.
I'm not a big Cameron Crowe fan, period. Like, I just...
Oh, okay. Speaking of... I just watched Almost Famous not too long ago. And
I love Almost Famous.
Yeah. I love everything about that.
Speaking of weird movie takes, I was talking to a coworker at work. He's like, I watched Civil War a couple days ago. So I went to Amazon and rented this other Alex Garland film, and I really fucking hated it. And I'm like, oh.
Watched Men?
He's like, I'm like, you watched Men? He's like, no, I watched Ex Machina.
Oh!
And I'm like,
involuntary punch.
I'm like, excuse me? I'm like, that would be the masterpiece.
It's like getting assaulted.
Not even annihilation, man.
What did he hate about it?
Yeah, how do you, what?
He's like, I've never been so bored in my entire life.
Come on.
And I'm just like, did we watch the same movie, dude? Like,
wow.
But I guess, though, if you were going from Civil War, which is like, Civil War is like the pinnacle of action movies.
Yeah.
If that's what you're going for, from to Ex Machina, I can kind of see it, maybe.
Yeah.
Because if that's what you went in expecting was like some kind of like another like cerebral, spectacular action movie, and you walked into Ex Machina, I can kind of see that you might be disappointed if that was your expectation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, don't watch Men.
Yeah,
you'll hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, don't break my heart again. No. Yeah,
I'm like, watch The Beach. Leo's in it. You'll love it.
Did you guys know that Oscar Isaac was in a punk band?
Yeah, I saw the video of that.
I was mystifying. Wait, who is that?
Him and Pedro are mystifying.
Yeah, I was legit shocked.
They just have this aura.
Do you know what my latest cool thing is? Michael Shannon's in an REM cover band.
What?
I'm sorry, you come again?
Michael Shannon is in an REM cover band, and they played the whole entire Murmur CD, and Mike Mills came out and played guitar with them.
No way!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And the world is right all of a sudden.
The thing is that the first time you hear that Michael Shannon is in an REM cover band, it sounds weird, and then you think about it for 30 seconds,
and you're like, this is not so weird.
Yeah, it all just kind of clicks. It's funny, speaking of Michael Shannon, they just had the Met Gala or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And there was, you know, a bunch of videos coming from, I saw this one video, and I think they're filming like Gigi Hadid or somebody like that coming up the stairs, and Michael Shannon walks by with holding an open bag full of potato, like plain Lay's potato chips, and goes, hi, it's me. And he keeps walking.
What a dude.
He's amazing. He's a gift. He is an absolute gift. And it's crazy that we got him and Tracy Letts from the same theater, same little theater.
That's true. That's right? True.
That's
I just miss REM. So.
I did too. I watched that scene of Michael Shannon in Revolutionary Road like probably once every couple months on YouTube. It's quite possibly one of the greatest monologues of all time.
My scene I watch of Michael Shannon's over multiple times is the scene from Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, where he's sitting with Ethan Hawke and Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he's like, I'm going to call you fucko. That movie, that's like one of my favorite Lumette movies ever, and it doesn't get a lot of praise, so
I miss him too. Okay, now this is just getting sad.
Saw that at VIFF, the beautiful film.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Yeah,
is that what, 06, right?
Yeah, 06. Something like that.
God damn,
Lumette, good. Ugh, good stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, sigh. Okay.
All of our heroes die, unfortunately. Yeah,
no, it all comes to an end at some point. Just flesh and bone.
Rest in peace, Steve Albini.
Oh boy, we pushed the dagger. I was just reading a whole essay that he wrote about In Utero.
Steve, I don't know if anybody knows this, but Steve Albini didn't take points on In Utero and probably lost like $10 million because he got paid $100,000 to produce In Utero, and they said, that's it. That's all I want.
Mm-hmm.
That is punk rock.
Yeah, he was frustrated with the process, too, because they wanted to record so much. And he's like, nope, you want me to record this, that,
this, that, yeah. You're done.
Yeah, two takes, Steve.
Yeah. It's a damn good record.
Yeah, it is. Ew. It
is. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. The drum sound on In Utero is just so incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
We're so old, guys.
Hey, I own it. I own it and I'll always own it. Nancy Travis is old too, so.
Oh, Jesus. All right. So, okay. I've already forgotten the
movie. Furiosa.
Thank you. So that's going to be our movie for next month. No, next 2 weeks. I don't even know. I'm going to stop talking now. Guys, where can you be found? Where can you be found?
I am Bill Harris. I am on Twitter and Letterboxd at SoundJam69. Hey, I'm part of a Critics Association now. Do you guys know that?
Me too.
That's really weird. Me too. Cascadia Critics. I just want to say rest in peace, David House. I'm going to miss you, sir. And I loved you, man. You were great. Thanks.
Yeah, coastline times 1,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's sad. Okay.
Sorry, I had to say it.
Bringing it.
Sidetracked. I'm Marina. You can find me on Letterboxd at the Marina and on Instagram at the Marina too. That's pretty much the only places to track me at. On LinkedIn, if you happen to be on LinkedIn, because that's where I'm.
I saw your camping photos. That looked really fun.
Yeah, we're going again in a couple of weeks, but we can talk about that when we talk about recording. Melissa? Because we can't let Steve go before you.
Mine's short. Anyway, you can find me at MelzyMelzy on the Litterboxed.
And I am on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at The Steeple Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. Also search my name on YouTube, and you'll find my weekly YouTube series, What the Hell Should I Watch?, which I do with my daughter, Chloe, every week. We added segments this week. It's awesome. Otherwise, you can find that as well on shiftheads.ca. And also on my website, not movie related, but I'm also doing something called Songs of a Fortnight, which is basically just all of my songs of the day put together in 14 song playlists. And it's weird and random, but I really love doing it because I love sharing music with people. So that's it.
Awesome. Until then, you can find links to everything we talked about today on the website at atcpod.ca. And until the next time.
Hack the planet.
Bye.